Podcast. It is Wednesday, May the 29th. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Today's show is brought to you by the patrons. You can go to patreon.com/the Mind and Fitness Podcast to support the show. So wanted to send a shout out to Casey, shout out to Alyssa, Brian, Sarah, Adrian, Stan, Kristen, Sarah, Helen, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. All those people have chosen to contribute monthly to the show, basically throw in a few dollars in the tip jar. Somebody donates two, somebody donates 30, somebody donates 25. So it's really up to you. It's really to help keep the lights on, show a little bit more support for the show, help pay for equipment, publishing costs, things like that. It's a tremendous undertaking. It may just seem like it's 1 hour per week, but the investment surely is larger than that to find guests, book show guests, carve out time to do it, edit it, post it, publish it, all that kind of stuff. So my deepest thank yous to all those people. Feel free to like us on Facebook as well. And we also have a group, the Deleters of Pain. Now, last week I did an episode where people were able to pick what it is they wanted talked about. And so there's actually a thread going right now where people are basically adding to it. What do they want me to talk about in future episodes? And there's even more things that are starting to pop up on there. So if you would like to join the conversation and be a part of the group, you just go to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Deleters of Pain is the group. And I'll admit, you would ask you a couple of questions mainly around what books have you read, what's your belief, how'd you hear about the podcast, and then I ask for your email address. I don't send anything, I don't even collect these email addresses. Once they're posted there, they're approved. It's mainly to see how serious are you about being a part of it, because if you're willing to give your email address, then it means that you're bought in, and really that's all that it's about. So thank you so much for the support. So today, great interview. I'm very, very excited about it. This is a writer in Brooklyn. I'm going to go ahead and post all of her information in the show notes. You can go and purchase her book. I highly recommend it. Today largely deals with something that we haven't really talked about a ton on the show, things like eating disorders, digestion problems. So a lot of things dealing with the stomach. There's some anxiety portion is there in there as well. But really, it's just the two of us sitting at a bar and just talking. So I think you're really going to like this interview. By the way, if you really like what it is that you hear, head on over to iTunes/Apple Podcasts. Leave a review, 5 stars, written review. It really helps the show be able to get some more notoriety, some more people drawing attention to it, some more people being able to get some help from the show. So if you've got a couple of spare minutes, please, please go over there and rate and comment. So again, this is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. The interview today, somewhere around 50 minutes or so. I think you're really going to dig it. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. Thank you so much for joining me today. We got a little bit of a different interview today. You know, normally I invite on the show and have people with herniated discs and migraine issues and spinal stenosis and issues like that. And there was an author that I came across who just actually put out a book. It's available on Amazon, and it's called Insatiable: How I Fought My Way Through Anxiety and Eating Disorders to Find Acceptance and Well-Being. And I have Heather Freudenthal on the line right now. Heather, are you there?
I am here.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I think it's really going to be an interesting story, an interesting journey. But I guess first of all, you know, you're calling out of Brooklyn, New York. How are things on the East Coast of the United States today?
They're good. You know, just recovering from the long Memorial Day weekend. So, but they're good. The weather's been great, so I can't really complain.
And you were just out of the country, right? Weren't you? You were kind of like a gypsy, it looked like, on on social media recently. Tell me about your trips.
Yeah, I am. It's funny. I have a couple of siblings that both recently moved away, one out of the country altogether. So I've been traveling a little bit, visiting my siblings. And I most recently was in Paris, France. So that was very, very exciting. I don't know if you've been, but it's just a really beautiful city, and I don't know, it was just fantastic to get away and get some time off of work.
Yeah, I haven't been to Paris. However, I've been to London, I've been to Scotland, I've been to Ireland. So there's parts of it, and I had tried to sort of talk my wife into catching a train from London to Paris, and she wasn't into it with the 2.5-year-old we were with at the time.
Yeah, that can be tough.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess let's, you know, there's a lot to digest here, and certainly I would recommend the book on Amazon. It's on Kindle, it's on paperback, but maybe we just start with, I always kind of like to Tarantino these things and almost like, you know, what are you up to these days? And then we kick it all the way back, throwback, if you will, and talk about sort of the beginning of the journey. So, you know, tell us what you do now for a living and, you know, how you got it to writing a book and, you know, where your interest came in that.
Yeah. So there's a lot there. So I actually work at a nutrition school right now. That's my day job. I'm very, very happy about that because it aligns with, you know, what I'm passionate about, which is health and well-being. It's a nutrition school that doesn't just focus on food and, you know, calories and nutrients and things like that, but it's really a holistic nutrition school. So that's what I'm all about. And then on the side, I'm doing health coaching. And so seeing clients one-on-one and giving seminars on healthy eating habits and things like that. And yeah, just finished this book. So that was a huge project, which it's funny. I've actually been writing it for probably like 7 years.
Wow.
But I didn't realize that that's what I was doing when I started it. I was just writing in my journal. So it wasn't until the last couple of years that a friend of mine who is a writer, who's a published author, you know, took a look at some of my journal entries. And she was like, you know, Heather, you have an arc here. You have a story that I think you could tell if you really wanted to do something with this. So I started to think more, you know, more realistically about putting my journal entries into a form that could actually be a book.
You know, what I think is really beautiful about the way that it's written, the titling of it in particular, is that it is a memoir. And so you said, like, it didn't start that way. I started writing it as a journal. And I feel like in a lot of ways, like, those are kind of the best stories, right? Like, what's the real story with, you know, and then we turn up the volume a little bit and tell a story with it. But ultimately, like, what is the actual, the firsthand account of what it is that's going on. And when you had said 7 years, I started thinking, I think Steve Ozanich was writing his book for like 12 years. And I'd always had thoughts of like sitting down and writing a book and thinking that it would just take a month or a couple weeks. Right. And it sounds like that doesn't exist. That's a pipe dream. That's a fairy tale. When I think that way. So, okay. So we got into kind of the, where it is now and ultimately publishing it. Let's start now at the very beginning. I mean, there's a lot here that's on the inside of the book. There's talk about IBS. There's talk about anxiety. So there's talk about a lot of things, but let's go back to whenever it is that the story began. You know, when did you start having some kinds of, hey, this just isn't right. I don't feel like myself. How long ago was it? You know, that kind of, you know, take us through that.
Yeah, well, so there's multiple answers to that, which is since I was a kid, I've never quite felt right. I've had IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, my whole life, basically. So that was always kind of there. But I think it was probably in my mid to late 20s that I kind of realized, you know what, even though this is my normal, it's not normal and it's not okay. It's kind of getting a little bit out of control. And that's when I kind of... that's when things really spiraled for me and where, you know, my IBS got so bad, but it was like, you know, layered with eating disorders and with anxiety and panic attacks and everything kind of came to a head basically. And I realized I absolutely cannot continue on like this. And so it started this journey of, you know, basically going from doctor to doctor to doctor to try to figure out what was wrong with me and how I could heal. And, you know, I really pretty much hit up every single type of doctor and modality you can think of. I mean, everything from, you know, the traditional gastroenterologists, therapists, acupuncture, Chinese herbs. I mean, you know, physical therapy, you name it, I've done it. So, it was quite a long process to kind of figure out, navigate that and get to the place where I felt better.
What did some of those specialists have to say? I mean, what was there? I always think that it's really interesting. my own story, but obviously the I don't know, probably 40 or 45 interviews or whatever it is that I've done on this show now, the wide array of different like diagnosis and explanations that medical specialists have sometimes. And again, I reiterate this every single time I bring this up, but I know that doctors don't mean any ill will, right? They're doing the best they can with the information that they have. But what were some of the things that you were told was going on, and what the cause of those things were? Was?
Wow. Well, I guess that depends on what you're asking, because I had been to doctors for my IBS as well as for my anxiety and for the panic disorder. So, are you specifically talking about the IBS? Or
let's start there, because it's the first thing that's mentioned on the inside of the book.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, to be quite honest, I got a very lackluster reaction from doctors. At least for me, there was just a lot of scratched heads, you know, because, you know, and I totally understand this. With doctors, they really have to do their due diligence. They have to take the blood work. They have to do the endoscopies, the colonoscopies. They have to do the x-rays. They have to rule out, you know, severe diseases, you know. And so when nothing was showing up technically on my blood work and in my lab results, they didn't really have any explanation to offer me. They would just kind of say, well, yeah, you have irritable bowel syndrome. And then that was kind of like the finale. It was like, there's your diagnosis. Now have a good day. You know, there was no follow-up to that. There was no, and this is how you can treat it. And this is how you can help it, and this is how you can manage it. There was really no sympathy. There was really no, you know, no one kind of like took charge and like, you know, grabbed the bull by the horns and just said, I know how I can help you. I know what's going to be good. You know, what's going to be good for you. You know, the doctors were just kind of like, I don't know what to tell you. You have a sensitive stomach, you know? And so once in a while they would tell me, you know, try to avoid, you know, burgers and fries, that will probably aggravate it. Or, you know, are you stressed out? You know, they might ask me if I was stressed out, you know. But what the thing is, when you're 17, 18, 19 years old, or even in your 20s, and someone asks you if you're stressed out, you know, you don't know yourself that well, you know. So my response would be kind of like, well, no, I'm not stressed out, like things are fine. Or even if I said yes, I didn't know the first thing about what true stress management was, and they weren't in a place to offer me that. You know, if I was already sitting on their exam table for 10 minutes, that was already 8 minutes too long, and they had to see the next patient.
Gosh, don't get me started on the don't get me started on that. Yeah. The insurance model and the, hey, we need to see 7 patients per hour. I think it's just maybe even more than that sometimes. It sounds like the implication that you're saying is basically like they told you had this thing, but ultimately the explanation and really everything around it was incomplete. Do you think that's a pretty accurate way of putting it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's only part of the story. There's a very minor sense of relief you get when you have a quote unquote diagnosis or a name to it, but without, you know, it's like, that's great. Now what do I do about it? They had nothing to say about that.
Yeah. So the IBS happened before, because there was something that happened with your dad, right? There was a health scare involved. This was before the IBS or after it?
So this was after it. So I had had a sensitive stomach my whole life, probably since I was an early teenager. So that's always kind of been in the picture. And then later in my mid-20s, my dad had a pretty bad health scare, which quite frankly traumatized me. I think I really didn't, you know, process it properly. And then that kind of, you know, took an existing condition and really exacerbated it.
Definitely. So one thing that I did, like basically I had all these health issues for so long, and then eventually I just couldn't really ignore it. But ultimately when I found Sarno's work, I sat down and I started writing lists of what sort of symptoms did I have, you know, going back years and years and years, maybe ones that I could ignore or ones that just weren't that quote unquote big of a deal. Did you know, the IBS was kind of the first, it sounds like the first big one that you couldn't ignore, but when you armchair quarterback and you look back, were there things that occurred earlier on that, yeah, no, there, I think there was a connection here.
earlier on, you mean prior to the IBS?
In life, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, definitely, it's hard to get a little, it's hard to get super specific, but I think just, you know, some of my upbringing and my childhood, just as far as feeling out of control, you know, I think that played a huge part in this need to have things kind of figured out and pre-planned and know all the answers. And, you know, my upbringing was actually pretty quote unquote normal. It was good. I wasn't abused in any way. Don't get me wrong, but you know, I'm a middle child. I have two siblings. My parents worked full time. They tried to take care of us. You know, there was just a lot happening in the household and a lot that was going on that I wasn't necessarily consulted on. And I don't know that my feelings were always taken into account despite best intentions, you know? And so I think I just felt very out of control as a child. And that made me want to react with a very, very type A personality and really try to control things that I now know later in life you can't really control. Yep. And so I think that was part of my healing journey, not to skip ahead, but I think that was one of the major lessons I learned in order to heal, was that, you know, pain and illness and disorders, they're very complicated, and we don't always know the exact answer and the exact right amount of medicine or meditation or what exactly is going to help and exactly when you're going to feel better. And for, you know, I was in such pain for so long and, you know, so uncomfortable that I would literally just hysterically cry for months on end saying, when is this going to end? When is this going to end? I need it to end right now, you know? And I realized that once I finally just kind of let go and just said, you know what, I have IBS. It's unpleasant. I don't know when it's going to get better. I don't have a good answer. I can just do the best I can. And when I kind of like eased up on those like need to knows, that's actually what helped me feel better. Honestly, it's one of the things that helped me feel better.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because I'm a big part of Steve Wozanich's philosophy is letting go. And I remember, could be TMS related, could not be, who knows. But I, at the end of 2015, I dislocated my shoulder, and I my shoulder condition was feeling worse as I was going doctor to doctor and, you know, second opinions and different imaging and stuff like that. And as soon as I got a diagnosis that I believed in, and that, hey, you know, some surgery and then some physical therapy and I'll be back on my feet and this is no big deal. Like, as soon as a doctor had said that and I felt comfortable with it, my pain was 99% gone. And I think it was just like, okay, it is what it is, and I'm letting it go. And it sounds like that's what you're describing.
Yeah, no, totally. I think exactly. It's like, there's something about the, I mean, that's the irony. It's like, obviously if you're sick, you do need to seek medical treatment, but there's a very fine line that's very easy to miss. And I think this is what happens for people with chronic illness and chronic pain, is that there's a line that's a little too easy to cross, where you go from seeking medical treatment to crossing over into, you know, seeking a cure. And it's that very seeking and that obsessiveness to find, you know, to find out what's wrong and to fix what's wrong with you that perpetuates it. So it's like kind of like having to pull back from that.
And it, and it becomes obsessive, you know, you talk about in the book, you go on about being essentially like trapped in a cycle of this debilitating health. And it sounds almost like you're bouncing between health issues, maybe with more physical symptoms, versus anxiety, which I'm not saying is not a physical symptom, because there certainly are physical symptoms associated with it. But meaning anybody walking around may never even know that you have anxious feelings at that moment. And so talk about this whack-a-mole and this cycle that you get in. You know, how long after this point of letting go, or do those two intersect? Kind of talk about maybe some of the more, or some of the symptoms that maybe came a little bit later.
So I think what happened was, is I, yeah, I was, I guess, after a while of living with IBS, where it kind of initially started off with, okay, this is very unpleasant and I hate this, but I started to develop this anxiety around the IBS. And when I say like anxiety, I don't just mean like, oh, I'm anxious, I might poop in my pants or something. Like anyone would be anxious about that. I mean like severe panic attacks. And it was like coupled with this, the book is partially called Insatiable because one of the symptoms I developed was this absolutely ravenous hunger that I could not satiate no matter how much I ate. And that's a really kind of a detrimental, symptom to have when you have IBS, because when you have IBS, obviously you want to take it easy on your stomach and you don't want to be eating all the time. You want to be having light meals and, you know, eating light food and things like that. But I was eating like nonstop because I couldn't feel full. And so I would develop this like debilitating panic and anxiety around feeling hungry, and around any little stomach ache. You know, the second I had a stomach ache or even a slight twinge or a slight gas pain or something, I would just literally in my mind spiral into this like worst case scenario. It was not a pleasant time in my life, I'll tell you that much.
Catastrophizing is very real, as as you're describing. And
catastrophizing, yes.
And that hunger that can't be satisfied, I'm thinking about like some of the kids that I knew in high school wrestling who had that exact same thing going on. But you know, for them, like, that's what they want, right? Always being hungry, the kid on the farm, all that kind of stuff. But for an adult, it can be. Well, and what's interesting is, okay, so you have the IBS symptoms, which normally you would associate with, like you said, like smaller meals and being really cognizant of it and things like that. But then you're also hungry all the time. And so were these two things in conflict then? Like, were they going on at the same time?
Oh, yeah. They were going on at the same time. They were overlapping. And I think that's what, you know, that was a huge part of what was causing me anxiety. Was on the one hand, you know, there's a part in the book where I talk about going to see a nutritionist. And on the one hand, the nutritionist is putting me on this very restrictive diet because of my IBS. And the truth is there was some validity to that. There were definitely some foods that were very much aggravating my IBS, and I needed to be put on this restrictive diet in order to figure that out and in order to get those foods out of my diet. But the other side to that was I'm starving all the time. So when you're starving all the time and anxious about it, and then a person of authority says, and by the way, now you can't eat like 90% of the foods you're used to eating, that sends you into like an even deeper tailspin of like, okay, well now what do I do? So I just kind of felt like I was damned if I do and I was damned if I don't. And this is, I think, what then kind of, you know, this is where kind of like the eating disorder part comes in, because I became overly obsessive about what I was eating, what I would not allow myself to eat. And it was this constant battle of, do I eat something and risk feeling sick because that's impossible? Or do I not eat it and risk feeling hungry? And that's not possible either. You know, so it's not a good headspace.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Exactly.
So the digestion part and associated with eating disorders is interesting. There's a listener, and I'm not going to say the person's name, but there's sort of been this back and forth with eating disorders dropped the microphone. Eating disorders followed by chronic digestion issues. This is years of this going on. And I've talked to this person a few times, and I think it's challenging to fully wrap that person's head around the fact that how could this concept, a mind-body concept, cause this much digestive stress where I get sick when I eat anything? It's at the point where the doctors, we can't find anything wrong, right? And so I guess, like, if you were to, and I'm sure there's got to be more people in the world listening to this where that's the same thing that they're experiencing, but I'm just thinking about this particular listener. I guess, what would you say when it comes to issues that feel that serious and that critical? How could they possibly be caused by a mind-body issue? I guess maybe do your best of explaining, like, physiologically, what is going on, and how can somebody out there get past it? If you met a new friend and they were having this kind of an issue, what do you tell them?
That is such a great question. Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, I have to say it absolutely has such a connection to the mind. Absolutely. The example I use in the book, later in the book, is I use a very kind of minor example, which is, you know, when we get embarrassed, we blush, you know?
Yep.
Like that is a very visible physiological reaction. Blood is rushing to your cheeks. We can see that, but it's caused 100% by an emotion, you know?
Yep.
And we have plenty of things like this, you know, you're nervous, you sweat, so on and so forth. So, I mean, any stress you have in your life, and when I say stress, that could be work stress, relationship stress, just the everyday stressors in life. It could just be the stress of going through a hard time, just an emotionally difficult time, loss of a loved one, loneliness. It could just be dissatisfaction with your life in some way. It could be really anything that absolutely manifests in your body, particularly your digestive system. That is so common. I mean, our gut is referred to as our second brain. It's actually, scientists are actually now, you know, really coming forward and saying that our gut basically might actually be more intelligent than the brain in our head. You know, we have our serotonin, most of our serotonin is produced in the gut. We have so much more bacteria in our gut than in the rest of our body combined. And it's just, it's such a central point for pretty much your entire being. I mean, there's a reason why it's called your core. So, you know, some people feel this very literally. Some people have they get depressed or they go through a breakup and they immediately, you know, have diarrhea or something like that. Or, you know, immediately, or they're lonely or they're bored and they immediately go to the kitchen and try to, you know, eat their feelings away. You know, sometimes it's very, you know, like they have an immediate reaction, you know, or like, oh, when I eat onions, I get heartburn. It's a clear-cut relationship. But I think what I would tell this listener and other listeners is that for me, one of the reasons why it's taken me so many years to heal and get better is because my reactions weren't so clear cut. It wasn't so like, oh, when I feel this way emotionally, then 5 minutes later, I feel this way physically. It wasn't like that. It was more like a general, I wasn't handling stress well. I wasn't processing my feelings well. I had way too much, you know, I had way too many control issues. And generally speaking, I was having a lot of stomach issues and developing this eating disorder and anxiety. And I was having, you know, lots of things were falling apart in my personal life. And my stomach was reacting to that, but not necessarily in a 5 minutes later kind of way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's making me think of too, there's a big criticism, I think, of people that maybe kind of get stuck in trying to get better for so long. And they say if the main objective is feel your feelings and process your feelings, some people can get really good at it, but that's after a lot of practice. Or if they just like with the snap of a fingers, they read one of these books and they just get it, but that's not the majority of people. And so some other people, I think, almost get so disconnected from themselves and disconnected from their own thoughts and feelings and emotions that they kind of push all that away. And then years later, when they've had all these chronic problems, whether it's digestion or back pain or whatever, they just say, I don't feel anything. Or the only anger or frustration I feel is about the symptoms themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so like, what are maybe, and maybe there's directives in the book, but what are maybe some recommendations for you, somebody who has overcome eating disorders and digestion issues? If somebody says, the only anger I experience is sadness I experience is related to the symptoms that I have, almost a stuckness.
Right. So it's not like a chicken and egg thing, meaning they're convinced that nothing emotional is going on in their life, that it's just these physical symptoms and any negative feelings they have are about the symptoms, but.
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
That's something I get more often than I would like to from people that listen to this. Cause I feel like I talk about it all the time, but let's hear it from somebody other than me.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's a few ways to look at that. One is are there purely physical symptoms out there that have absolutely no basis in anything emotional? Sure. You know, I don't think every single cold I catch is because I have, you know, some repressed anger, you know, like sometimes I might just catch a cold. You know, that's just a small example, but, you know, what I would say to that is then have your feelings about the, about your symptoms. You know, it's okay to say, can I curse on the podcast? Is that okay?
I always check the explicit box. So go for it. Whatever you want.
Okay, excellent. So, you know, sometimes you just have to say just like, fuck this, like this fucking sucks. I feel like shit. This is so fucking unfair. You know, one of my favorite therapists that I've had over the years, I would cry to her about my IBS and I was waiting for her to tell me something like, don't worry, I'll help you resolve this, or like, you won't have this forever, or like, we're going to fix this. But one of the best things she was able to do for me was, when I was crying and just crying about how unfair it was, she would just sit there and be like, you're right. It's totally fucking unfair. It is. And she had nothing else to offer me. And so I think accepting sometimes that you have these symptoms and just accepting that that's a part of who you are and just learning to be okay with that can actually do a lot to help reduce the symptoms. That being said, I would venture to, you know, not being a scientist and not, you know, having the numbers in front of me, I would go as far as to say I think that most physical symptoms are in some way correlated to something emotional. Now, whether it was solely caused by something emotional or there's just an emotional component to it, that's kind of, you know, that's hard to say. It really depends on the person and the situation, but there's always an emotional component, even if those emotions are about the symptoms, even if they're just purely, I fucking hate having chronic headaches, you know what I mean? Whatever it is, there's always an emotional component. So the more you can recognize your emotions and just have them and be okay with it, I think that's really important. And not to get too heady, but you know, trying not to have meta emotions. And what I mean by that is if you're sad, be sad. If you're pissed, be pissed. If you're, you know, if you're feeling hopeless, then feel hopeless, but don't feel bad about those feelings. Don't add an additional layer of guilt or shame or regret. Just be sad. Just be, it's really hard to do that. This is why I think so many people have eating disorders or have experienced them or have turned to drugs or alcohol or food or anything, really, is to cope with really unpleasant feelings that, let's face it, nobody wants to feel. Nobody wants to feel rejected, lonely, hurt, desperate, depressed, you know, heartbroken. Nobody wants to feel these things, but it's life, you know? I don't know.
There's two really interesting things that social media, I feel like, has done to people in 2019. It has happened before that, but a couple of recent observations are going to be, A, it's made us too analytical, meaning we feel like we need to explain ourselves for everything. And then two, the posts with motivational quotes and always about positivity and gratitude this, gratitude that, which I think are fine and they all have their place. But I think the problem is that if the messaging is you need to be grateful of this, then sort of what it's doing is shoving under the rug the notion that you're even allowed to have negative thoughts or feelings or emotions or whatever. Meaning like, if I feel this way, then something must be wrong with me. So people just don't do it. And whether that's a conscious habit or an unconscious habit, I would think probably more the latter, can really get a lot of people in trouble. And it's really no different than in the 50s. If a dad, you know, if a son walked in the house and was crying because he had a tough day at school in fourth grade, and the dad said, you know, we don't cry in this house, be a man or whatever. It's the same thing as today, people being fed these, you know, I'm grateful about this, be positive, don't think about negative stuff, you know, don't be upset about this, don't be upset about that. It's really no different. 70 years later, the problems are the same, but now there's, I think it's just more readily accessible. It's just something that I've given some thought to, where it's like, is it okay to feel certain ways? And I feel like people don't even know whether it's okay or not anymore.
You know what? 100%. I'm really glad you brought up the gratitude part, because that, I'm a big, big proponent of gratitude. I think it's a really essential part of healing. But that being said, you're totally right. I think some people take it to an extreme where, and I actually talk about this in the book a little bit, you know, where it's like, yes, by all means, focus on, you know, focus on your progress, like, you know, be kind to yourself, be, you know, be grateful, focus on the positive, all that stuff. Yes. But if you're going through a hard time or you're feeling something and you're trying to talk yourself out of it or ignore it, it's like, that's not good either. You really have to make space to feel bad if you feel bad, you know, and one doesn't negate the other.
There was a question I was trying to think of asking earlier, and then I couldn't remember it and I wrote it down. And so we're going to jump back about 14 minutes here, because I want to ask that period of time to which you couldn't satisfy your hunger. What was going on with your body weight at the time? Did that change? Did you gain weight, or did it pretty well stay the same? Or what was the, I guess, what was going on in terms of, weight at the time?
I feel like I'm going to get really hated on by a bunch of listeners right now, but I'm just going to be honest. My weight never changed one bit, which is very weird, because I was eating an insane amount of food at that time. But yeah, my weight actually didn't change at all. But I think that's a testament to, you know, the IBS and the way that my body was not really properly absorbing nutrients, or however it was. What's the word I'm looking for? Oh my gosh. Oh my God, why am I like drawing a book?
Well, okay. So the reason that I asked that is that, and this is where I'm going to pay some homage to Nicole Sachs, who I talk about on this podcast a lot, but she wrote The Meaning of Truth. And something that she talks about a lot, and her and I have conversed about this in the past, is that I think that it's a fine line, because if we were to say TMS or mind-body issues or negative emotions or whatever it is, suppressing those things causes chronic issues, it's not exactly that simple. So one way that Nicole explains it, and I think makes perfect sense and is sort of lost a lot of times, is that essentially what is happening is that you are caught in a chronic fight or flight, and somehow it is disrupting your systems in some way. So meaning that your digestion system may be fine. However, your immunity may be terrible. So somebody getting constant colds or not recovering from infections, that could be the exact same thing as somebody else's back pain, just like somebody's back pain is somebody else's migraines. And so that's why there's such a variety of these different mind-body issues, because something is out of whack in the fight or flight system. So if you would have said, I had this intense hunger and I was gaining a lot of weight, I probably wouldn't have been surprised. But I'm even happier that you said that you didn't, because what that would tell me is that fight or flight was stuck on, and the way that your system was interpreting different messages was just, it never got into rest and repair. And it was essentially doing something wonky, which is inhaling a lot of food but not gaining any weight because of it, which even further, I feel like, would establish the point of, like, for me, for instance, you know, I had certain issues, but I didn't have others. And I know plenty of people that get all sorts of different issues that is related to this stuff, but it's not the same things that I get. So everybody's a little bit different.
Right. Totally. And it's funny, I hear people say all the time, you know, I talk to a lot of people about this, and, you know, they're always very curious about my diet and my stomach issues. And I've had people say to me, like, oh, that sounds awful, you know, but I can't imagine, because I have an iron stomach, or I can eat anything. And I think to myself, well, can you? Because maybe you're not having digestive issues like I am, but you're clearly having, like you said, chronic migraines or chronic colds or back pain or whatever. So it's kind of like, you know, I think people forget that, you know, if there is something off with their fight or flight system as well, or they're not taking care of themselves and they're not addressing kind of like the whole picture, that's going to show up in some way, shape, or form. For me, it happens to be my digestive system. That's my weak point.
Yep.
But everyone's got their own weak points for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. And this extends out into, Steve Ozanich talks about this at the end of his book, but could be workaholism, meaning like you're a workaholic, or could be an alcoholic, could be using drugs. Like, so your IBS is my back pain, is somebody else's drug issues, right? So something in one way or another, our mind is more or less using our body or our addictive habits in some way to counterbalance the fact that we're not feeling our feelings. And I feel like in particularly the last couple of months, I myself have gotten really good at that. Like yesterday, I'm having this crazy sneezing attack and then went through the motions of actually like feeling the feelings. And literally it took maybe a minute and it just stopped and everything went away. It was just like, but to me, it's like the tsunami coming in and then rolling out and then coming in and then the ocean eventually calms. So talk a little bit about like, how long was the period of time between, okay, I need to handle this stuff differently and it's a mind-body issue and going doctor to doctor is not helping me, to when you felt like, yeah, this part of my life is behind me and I'm healed, I'm done?
I think that probably took about probably a good 3 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I think initially, when the symptoms got really out of control, that started in about 2013.
Okay.
And I think it took me till about, I would say between 2013 and 2015 or 16 is where I was kind of like jumping around from different doctor to doctor and trying to, you know, solve it and, you know, get all the information I could and really try to, you know, on this mission of obsessive trying to heal myself. And I think by 2016, 2017 is when I was kind of like, you know what? I think I've gathered most of, I know everything I need to know at this point. There's no more like stones left to unturn. There's no silver bullet I just haven't found yet. I think I just need to, you know, use the tools I already have and just be patient, you know? So definitely a few years for sure.
What was, I'm happy that you said that because there's plenty of people that I talk to regularly around the world that will say, I started reading Dr. Sono's book 3 months ago and nothing, you know, I'm not better yet. When is this going to go away? And then I think, unfortunately, there just becomes a period of time where that doubt creeps in or that doubt remains or that doubt comes back. Was there a period of time in that three years where, I'm going to work with the tools that I already have, but then maybe 2-3 months go by and maybe you resort back to, you know, the old ways or your old ways or whatever it was that you were doing before. Did you have instances of that, or was it, I'm hunkering down however long it takes and that's it?
Oh, every, like all the time I always would find myself going back. In fact, just recently, just this past winter, I came down with like a mild, I don't know if it was like a stomach bug or something, but I was having some stomach issues and it was kind of lingering on for like a good 2 weeks. And I found myself calling the gastroenterologist and trying to make an appointment because I was like, something's really, really wrong and I have to like figure out what it is. And lucky for me, the gastroenterologist couldn't fit me in for another few weeks. So I wound up not making the appointment, but it was the best thing for me because I kind of realized, Heather, there's nothing wrong with you.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with you. It's wintertime. You probably ate something that offset your stomach. You just need to, you know what to do, which is just chill out, you know? Like in 2 months, if you're still feeling sick, okay, then maybe go to the doctor. But, you know, that's actually a really good question because I would love to say that I reached this point where I finally realized, okay, no more seeking out the answer, no more, you know, excavating. I'm just gonna, you know, like to use your term, hunker down and just wait it out. I'd love to say that like I adopted that mentality and it have like I've never looked back since. But that's not the case. I still do once in a while find myself kind of, you know, if something comes up, my first initial instinct is to be like, well, I guess I should go see a doctor, yep. you know, but yep. I've gotten much more in tune with my body over the years and much less of an alarmist and, you know, not catastrophizing everything. So it becomes a lot easier now. And also I have a much clearer picture of how long healing takes. And it's not the same for everybody. It's not the same instance. But what I can say for everybody is that it takes a long time. If you're suffering from something that you've been suffering with for years and years, that is not going to change overnight. And believe me, I know the frustration of picking up a book or going to a doctor or going to a seminar or trying a new herb or trying a new supplement or whatever, and literally watching the pot boiling and thinking, all right, it's been 2 weeks already. Why am I not better yet? Or it's been 2 months. Why am I not better yet? But the thing is, it really happens when you're not looking. It really happens when you just, you know, take care of yourself and get on with your life and don't focus on it so much. You know, that's when healing happens. And it can take a while, unfortunately, but that's the truth.
Yeah, and I think that maybe part of it, because there are definitely instances of spontaneous healing from this kind of stuff, but there's even a book out about radical remissions from cancer, all sorts of, you know, stage 4 pancreatic cancer and all this kind of stuff. And to me, I feel like it's just as much the switch gets flipped and then the body heals itself. And because it's been out of whack for so long, it's going to take X amount of time to, you know, rebuild itself or heal, whatever the case is. I almost feel like it's since we're talking about neuroplasticity, and that's really what this whole thing is, you know, being able to ultimately reverse a habit or reverse a thought or reverse the whole, you know, automatic reaction of repression, like that in itself might be the thing that is taking the longest time for a lot of people, because it's not Adam Heller's Zero Pain Now book. I feel like I've referenced it a lot lately, but a lot of what he talks about in there is that to go through the motion of feeling your feelings is not something that you can literally just snap your fingers and start doing. If you've not been doing it for 20 years or 10 years or 5 years or whatever it is, getting yourself to automatically go to your emotions when you have a pain or discomfort or whatever is not something that's easy. Like, you got to do it every day, all the time, as much as possible. And maybe over the course of weeks, months, years, it will become an automatic habit. But if you slip up and you take a week off from doing it, you're sort of resetting yourself. And so, I don't know, I guess the best advice I would give is, if it feels like it's taking a long time, you who's listening to this, it's not taking the longest time possible. I'm on the phone right now with somebody who it took 3 years, right? And still was able to hang in there and come out the other side. I think it's really an important message.
Yeah. That's a really, really, really good point.
So as we're wrapping up here in the last couple of minutes, I told you 45 minutes, we're now at 45 minutes and 11 seconds, but I want you to, you know, plug away with the book, and there's going to be links to this, to the Amazon page and such in the show notes. But, you know, talk to us about the book, and how long is it, and how much of a read is it, and why should people add this to the books that they've read on the topic, especially if they're still stuck? Which, by the way, I sent a message to the person I was talking about earlier, said, hey, mm-hmm. the interview I'm doing right now, I'm talking about you without saying your name. And that person mm-hmm. already ordered a copy. So,
oh,
so
that's amazing.
So there you go. You got one right there.
Yay. Yeah. Excited when I see the numbers on Amazon jump even by one. I'm like, this is amazing. So the book is based. So I think what makes my book a few logistics. One is it's a little over 200 pages. I've had a few people read it already and told me they read it in a day, like that it's a very quick, easy read, that it flows really well, and that it's really if I'm to use their words, that it's engaging. So it's like easy to just kind of keep going through. And I talk about, you know, I mentioned earlier, or we talked about earlier, that my dad's health scare was kind of like a catalyst for what really like set off my IBS to get so bad, and the eating disorders and all the anxiety. But the truth is, there were other things going on in my life. My marriage was falling apart. you know, I was having other, you know, things happen that, that frankly I couldn't control, which was very reminiscent of my childhood. And so this is really what the book is about, is it's a memoir. It's not just this, you know, it's not a traditional self-help book in that, like, you know, I'm just going to define eating disorders and I'm just going to talk about what they are. And here are some, you know, easy steps to try to combat them. It's like, no, I'm actually telling my personal story. I write about it in a very, what I think is a very relatable way. And, you know, to just, and I'm real. I don't really hold much back. If I do hold anything back, it's really out of respect for my, you know, former husband and out of respect for my family. But, you know, I really, you know, talk about some very, to me, devastating moments in my personal life and how it's clearly linked with what I was experiencing physically. And just, you know, how hard, you know, it's so hard to overcome, even once you've recognized, okay, my stomach is exploding because, you know, I'm going through a divorce or whatever it is. It's like trying to heal from that while going through a divorce. It's kind of like, it's, you're kind of like constantly being hit while, you know, you're trying to stand up each time you're, every time you make a little bit of progress with your health, it's like, well, now I have to sell my house and now I have to sell my car and now I have to find out that my ex has a new girlfriend. And, you know, like all these things that are, you know, and I'm sure anyone can relate in their own life, whatever it is that they've gone through, it doesn't have to be exactly what I've gone through. And and their physical symptoms don't have to be exactly what I physically experienced. But I think people will know what it's like when they read the book. They'll be able to relate to just having shit crash down around you and have your health fall apart at the same time and feel like, you know, you have two choices. Either you can quit this life, which I wasn't going to do, or you're going to try to fight your way out of it. So yeah, I hope that readers will get a sense that it's not an easy battle, but it's absolutely attainable and it's worth it. And I said it's not an easy battle, but in another way, I think it's easier than we think. I think that's one of the messages of the book, is that even though you can be in a really dark place emotionally and physically with whatever chronic pain or emotions that you're feeling, the body wants to heal naturally. You know what I mean? And I think the more we can just like get in touch with that and get out of the way and, you know, not force it or like over medicate it, you know, it'll do what it wants to do. We just have to be patient and let it do its thing, you know?
Closing thought. I think it's always an interesting question to ask this. How are you different now as a person than you were just before your first really bad symptom came along? Just, you know, your day-to-day life, how it is you process things, react to things, think about things, you know, maybe give us a couple sentences.
Sure. Well, I'm a lot more mindful, that's for sure. And I'm a lot calmer. I'm able to process bad feelings and bad information and bad symptoms in a very mindful way. So I allow them to happen and experience them. But I don't allow them to overtake me or send me into a bad spiraling place.
The book is Insatiable, How I Fought My Way Through Anxiety and Eating Disorders to Find Acceptance and Well-Being. You can just go to Amazon. If you type Insatiable Anxiety, it's the first thing that comes up. But like I said, the link will be in the show notes. People are going to be able to listen to this all over the world, but on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and iHeartRadio, on all the major outlets. Heather, thank you so much for spending an hour with us today. I think this was awesome. I think this is going to reach a lot of people, and it's completely different than any of the previous episodes that I have done. So thank you for your time.
Awesome. No, thank you so much for having me. I really, really enjoyed it.